This episode is sponsored by CultureAmp, OC Tanner, and People Strategy. Discover how you can use predictive analytics to forecast employee turnover with your free guide, available at cultureamp.com/happy. That's cultureamp.com/happy. OC Tanner, the global leader in engaging workplace cultures, helps thousands of top companies create peak moments that inspire people to achieve, appreciate, and connect to purpose and each other. Clients use OC Tanner's Culture Cloud suite of apps and solutions to retain, engage, and attract talent, bond their teams, drive innovation, and communicate company values. And our new sponsor, a full-service broker, People Strategy, works with clients to identify competitive benefits packages to meet the needs of employees, their families, and the company's financial obligations. People Strategy also provides clients with a technology suite that simplifies recruiting, hiring, and onboarding, payroll and payroll taxes, open enrollment, and benefits administration, time and attendance, compliance, reporting, and more. One provider, one low price. Let People Strategy help you develop your people strategy.
You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarlane. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.
Welcome to the HR Happy Hour. I'm Trish McFarlane, and I am joined by a guest host today. Steve Bowes is out and about on assignment, and so today I'm joined by Karen Hunter.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome to the show. This is you've been involved in a few, but you've not actually been a show host. So
exactly. I haven't been in this seat yet, so I'm very excited.
Are you excited?
I am.
Okay, well, hopefully you're ready. You can, you've seen and heard it enough times, I think you can just sort of interject at any point. For the listeners, Karen Hunter works with me, and so we know each other very well. And I don't know, she may just actually take over. We'll have to wait and see how it goes. But we are really excited today about our guest. We are here in beautiful San Diego and attending Cornerstone On Demand's Convergence 2019 conference, which if you've not been to, you should definitely look into. You can find their website very easily and get more information. I've been a couple of times, and I have to say, I don't say this lightly, Karen, but I just went to a session on learning and diversity and inclusion, and it was hands down probably one of the best sessions I've been to in years. And I literally see hundreds and hundreds of sessions a year, so
that's
I don't know.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Now, what stood out? What's the?
So it was a session with one of the customers, Sodexo, and they were sharing both their approach to diversity and inclusion, being the 18th largest employer in the world. And obviously they have many challenges with that. They've been a partner with Cornerstone for 10 years. And then they were sharing sort of how they were using the learning platform to really bolster and boost all of the attention that they put on their training with regard to diversity and inclusion, but very heavily into the inclusion piece, which was interesting to me. I think when you layer in also the fact that the speakers were really warm and welcoming and entertaining and kind of all those things together, it was literally like a great session. So
yeah, and if they bring it full circle, that's great. You get to see all yeah, sides of it.
They did at the very end they kind of wrapped it up with some measurements too, and so again, you don't always see that. So anyway, here at the event, just a few quick reminders before we bring our special guest on. If you are listening to the HR Happy Hour, hopefully you're already subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. But remember, we also have the HR Happy Hour show on Alexa. To add the show to your Echo device's flash briefing, just search for the HR Happy Hour skill on your Alexa app. Also, we have one announcement about the HR Technology Conference coming up this fall in October. Tickets are on sale right now. You can get a discount of $300
with the code STEVE300. Just go to hrtechconference.com for your registration. So with that, why don't we jump in? We've got our guests like waiting in the wings patiently as we sit here and chit-chat about things. Today's guest, everyone, is Jeff Miller. He is the AVP of Learning and Organizational Effectiveness. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Good. Well, you know what? We've already obviously started talking about the show a little bit. Why don't, before we get your impressions of that, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your role here, and what you're doing?
Great. Yeah, so as you said, my title is AVP of Learning and Organizational Effectiveness. What that really boils down to is that I'm responsible, accountable for driving the strategy and execution of programs around global learning and development, our succession, career mobility, performance, employee experience, and change management efforts at Cornerstone. I've been there now almost 6 years. It'll be 6 years next month. Prior to that, I was a university professor for about 20 years, retired, so happy to be here.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so you have to tell us, what did you teach?
So my background is I have a PhD in educational psychology with a focus in learning and human motivation. Okay. And so I am an educational psychologist, so I taught ed psych courses and multicultural education. So the session you went to on diversity and inclusion was one that I unfortunately had to miss. But something that's near and dear to our heart. So I'm also driving a lot of our D&I strategy as well.
Great. Well, they did an excellent job. So you'll have to follow up with them later and tell them that you're hearing good things. I have to say, though, Karen can share her background, too. You all might, like, kick me out of the room because she's also someone who's very into the learning space from an educational perspective.
Definitely. My education is in multiple intelligences, brain-based learning, and just kind of seeing how that fits in with everything here has been really exciting to see, definitely.
Oh, that's cool. I'm actually involved in multiple conversations with people about how do we move beyond just the simple ways that people look at learning from visual to auditory to kinesthetic to mm-hmm. try to bring in Gardner's work, and how do we start to right now we're right. I know the only thing I cannot do is get into the musical kind of stuff because that's where my singing drives people out. But yeah, I think there's a lot of potential with multiple intelligences in the workforce.
Great. Well, see, like I said, audience, obviously I am an out of my league here at the moment. So this is a good thing, though, right? Cornerstone, of course, the solutions cover, well beyond learning, but that's really the core of the business. And what I find most fascinating, especially coming to speak with you all each year, is that for me, this idea of having learning kind of embedded into every single aspect of the employee life cycle is something that just makes sense to me. Both when I was a buyer, I was a Cornerstone customer for many years when I worked in human resources. So I've actually used it myself for my own learning, for my employees' learning, for my team's learning. How would you say that in your 6 years, I mean, you've been here, I think, long enough to start to see sort of the evolution. Can you just tell the audience a little bit about kind of where the company is currently and maybe how you've gotten to this point with your approach to the market?
Yeah, so the company this year, actually, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary, which is quite an accomplishment given the tech space. The company was one of the first in the market with regards to the software platform as a service model. Where the company is now is really starting to make, in fact, Adam made mention of this in his keynote, Adam Miller, our CEO, this morning,
right,
about really how the bread and butter of Cornerstone has always been learning, the learning management system. The idea historically was to get people to realize their potential. What we've started to see, especially over the last 5 or 6 years, has been this emergence of the gig economy and how that's starting to really tie a lot of the pieces of work from performance to succession to recruiting all into a really interesting web that's all connected to learning. He spoke clearly today about how one of the numbers that we're seeing on a national level around our employment numbers may be a little bit misleading in that we don't necessarily have a lot of people that are ready to come into the workforce. So we have more qualified people coming into the workforce, but we don't necessarily have enough jobs, which counters the idea that we're running at a, whatever it is today, a 3% unemployment rate.
Right.
So there's a lot of look right now, and it's, in fact, he started to use this word about an experience, talent experience, moving mm-hmm. through talent management and into the experience of work. So what we're seeing, in fact, I'm giving several presentations tomorrow at the conference around the really how human beings interact with the machine. And that has been a huge piece of the work that we've been doing, how everything is connected back to learning. Again, whether it's development plans, whether it's the new feature that Adam announced today, which is exciting, called Conversations, mm-hmm. which is really, at least it's going to, you know, we're going to be moving into what's called an open beta here very, very soon. And right. we're hoping that's changing the way people not only do one-on-ones, but just connect with each other, understand how we're sharing information, talking about information, as well as connecting it to building learning pathways for people to help start to realize where they're going. Another piece that we're seeing, especially in the last few years, has been the transition of the word career ladder into that. Now everybody knows, though, it's the career lattice conversation, but it goes a lot deeper than that. As you're looking at young people that are now coming into the workforce who want to be promoted, they want to be upwardly mobile, but now it's upwardly mobile may start to, that term may start to change. We're seeing people that, like myself, you know, I ended up coming to Cornerstone. I had a director level at two previous companies. I ended up coming in here at a little bit of a reduced level, mm-hmm. realizing that if you can demonstrate your worth at a company, you're going to move up, and you can move up fairly quickly. Right. So we're starting to see a lot of opportunities for skill building and knowledge and how we're using competencies versus skills and what is the gap and how do we close the gap. And, you know, we've moved now from really from departments of training to departments of learning at organizations, which really suggests that the ownership of the learning, while it's still technically my responsibility for the learning of the organization, you know, it's like what I used to tell my middle school students, you know, 30 years ago or so, was my job is to present you with the information. It's your decision whether or not you choose or not to choose to learn it. And so I think we're seeing that in the market overwhelmingly. Couple that in mm-hmm. with some of the more complex challenges people in HR are dealing with now, such as the idea, perhaps, that job hopping is not this horrible thing anymore.
Right.
So at the same time as we're talking about at Cornerstone, some of the things about how do we keep people and how do we retain the right people, we're also seeing this need to provide opportunities for people to become career mobile inside companies. So that's where a lot of that behavior is. So a lot of the work that we're doing internally at Cornerstone is focusing on how do we help people move from one part of an organization to another, which then feeds in, again, if you really want to talk about a true learning mindset, it's how do we put that message inside of all of our managers' heads? It's kind of like, Dr. Adam used an NFL example in his keynote. Another NFL example that I like to refer to is if you look at the history of the best coaches in the history of sports, mm-hmm. sometimes people will talk about how many Super Bowls they won in football, et cetera, or how many Stanley Cups that they may win. However, the other piece to look at it is the coaching tree that they call it. The people that you've developed, are they moving up and making an impact? And how is your organization feeling that impact? So it all really does begin and ends in the learning space. It's why one of the things that we're doing and really focusing on now, in fact, the session I'm delivering tomorrow, is really focused on trying to help people understand how we need now more than ever to be focused on developing the entire person, to be focusing on what is it, as hokey as it may sound, I think it's important for people, especially in HR, so your listeners may be understanding of this, which is right now it's more important than ever to understand what it means to be a person mm-hmm. at work. Because we got people that work remote, we have people that are always connected to their phones, right. So we're always working, and many organizations, they're trying to focus on efficiencies and productivity, and we're forgetting that the people are the ones that are driving the efficiencies, and that's a big area that we're moving.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I mean, you shared a lot there, and honestly, in my head, I'm thinking, like, wow, we could do, like, a whole series where each one of those topics is a complete, full discussion, and we still wouldn't get to everything. One of the things, you know, when you're talking about this sort of mindset of learning, when I think back to, you know, I've been in the analyst space myself for probably 6 or 7 years. So, but prior to that, I'd spent almost 20 in HR, you know, and I felt like there was always a focus on learning, but more on the training kind of we're going to push training onto someone, right? Whether it certainly wasn't personalized, it wasn't kind of geared toward, hopefully toward their development, but not necessarily tied to their development. And then once I became an analyst, it sort of felt like for a few years, people were moving away from spending on learning. And even some of the other companies were either not developing, you know, learning solutions, or they were taking the learning solutions they had and just kind of like shelving them a little bit. It seems like you all really just continued the investment and development in learning And it turns out that it's really key to this entire employee life cycle. I wonder too, you mentioned, you know, the gig economy and how that's tying pieces together. And then just now when you start talking about kind of the whole person, I'm put you on the spot here a little bit. I haven't heard anything yet mentioned here about maybe tying learning to well-being, but is that kind of what you're getting at? Because it feels like that's kind of it's definitely connected, right? And no one else, I haven't heard anyone else at any vendor anywhere make that connection yet. So it'd just be interesting to see, is that sort of the next phase? Like, you know.
That was a good tee up. I don't know what time it is. I can look at the conference app. But one of our keynotes is a guy by the name of Joe Burton.
On motivation, right?
Who is the CEO of Will, who focuses on mindfulness.
Oh, okay.
And so actually one of our keynotes, I think it's today.
It's today.
It's gotta be, I think it's probably today, is focusing on mindfulness. In fact, we had Joe come to Cornerstone, and we actually have the Will e-learning contents, WHIL, in the system. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is huge right now. We're hearing everyone's on the Headspace app. If you go on American Airlines, you got the Calm app right in front of you.
Right.
There is a recognition now that people are overworked, overwhelmed. It's like one of my favorite terms that I heard recently was somebody, I asked somebody a couple of weeks ago about something they were experiencing. And I said, how was it? They said, I'm whelmed. And I had never really heard that one before.
I haven't either.
We work so much that we often forget, and many companies often forget, that you know you have to take care of yourself first. And one of the trainings that we teach, so we do seminars, we got e-learning, we've got all different kinds of learning experiences that I run at Cornerstone. But in one of the trainings, you know, we actually refer back to airline safety. And when you get on a plane, God forbid, if there's air pressure is lost, if you've been on a plane, they tell you, put your mask on first. And so we're really trying to teach that to people, that you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people.
Right.
And again, to tie back to what you're mentioning about the gig economy, what we're learning from the millennial generation coming into the workforce was 5 years ago or so, when they started coming into the workforce, everybody complained about them. Oh, they're overeager. They come in at 5 minutes later, they want a promotion. And when you step back from that a little bit, you start to realize it's not the worst thing. And if you're setting expectations up front, you can temper a lot of that hunger. All they're saying is, I want to learn. I want you to grow me. I have a perspective. I have something to share. Mm-hmm. I can learn from you, but you can learn from me.
Sure.
And I think that that's where we're starting to see, again, I'll deviate a little bit, the concept of learning is really starting to flourish. You know, we've had formal learning, this push-down training that's been historical, but we also now have the pull, and as we were mentioning, that this with the AI world and big data, we have predictive learning. So the fact of the matter is that if from that move to training to learning, what people in L&D seats need to really remember is that we are still really, to a degree, the keepers of that kingdom of learning. But we now have to make sure that rather than just delivering all of it in a stand and deliver models, we have to curate really good content. And if it's good, they're going to come back.
Sure.
And so the role has pivoted, and people say, with whether it's the gig economy or whether it's just how fast technology is changing, am I going to be out of a job? And the fact of the matter is that anybody that's in human resources will always have a job as long as you're continuing to proactively think about how can this function change and morph along with the changing areas of the business. It's why HR now really, when you look back 20 years, HR did not in most companies have a voice and a seat at the executive table.
So true.
And now people are saying that L&D is responsible. I've heard this from a number of people. I think Burson has said it, where, you know, L&D is now responsible to educate the executives on the changes in the world now, so we can meet these needs. So it's just been a fundamental shift.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious, you know, knowing that you've both been teachers, when you think about sort of this evolution from sort of a training mindset to learning mindset, and now to your talking more about this whole experience of learning, right? So that it becomes really part of that fabric of your culture in everything you do. How, looking back to when both Karen and Jeff, when you were teaching students, how do you see the current students, maybe high schoolers or, you know, people who are just into college, how do you think that this might impact them coming into the workplace? Are we, I guess my question is, are we going to be ready for them?
I think we're preparing to be ready for them. I think it's going to be very different when they come in. The way they've been educated is very different now than what we did, you know, even 10 years ago. Just from my teaching experience, you know, it was always top down. You're just providing that knowledge, and whenever you get your degree, you move on, you get your job, and that's
so that. More of a training approach.
It definitely was a training approach. And what's neat to see is how really what I was teaching kindergartners 17 years ago is how we're educating everybody who's working within a company now. You know, we're giving them interactive, individualized learning abilities so that they can move different directions within the company. And that's really how we used to do it.
So it's almost like changing our approach to where it almost like, you know, as a kindergartner, you're sort of being formed because you don't know who you are, what you're interested in, or kind of like the sky's the limit.
And
I sort of feel like
experiences.
Right. And I sort of feel like, Jeff, that's kind of what you were talking to. Can you maybe address how you see that? Maybe the students that you had both in middle school or, you know, when you're a professor, how do you see that applying now that these are the people that are coming into the work world?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think to a large degree, conceptually, people have the skills, creative thinking, some right. problem solving, some critical thinking. But what I still don't see people coming into the workforce ready to do, which I still find fascinating, and I do have a theory on it,
okay.
is we don't know how to have difficult conversations with people. It
That's
astounds
true.
Me that we are focusing in businesses globally on things like conflict resolution, mm-hmm. giving feedback, receiving feedback. My argument to go back to tie it all together in a nice little package is, you know, when I was teaching, I used to love using something called cooperative learning, mm-hmm. where you have four kids sitting around a table and they're working on a project together and all that fun stuff. Historically, at most schools, and I don't have stats on this, but I have anecdotal stats from talking with thousands of teachers over the years.
Sure.
And you talk to students, and for your listeners, I'll just ask you the question, which is, when you were in a cooperative learning environment, I don't care what grade you were in, whether it was kindergarten or grade 12 or even in college, mm-hmm. when there was a disagreement, did the teacher work with you to help you solve the problem, or did they separate the kids? And most often, if they were really getting into a bit of a discussion argument, right. the teacher would separate the kids, which is the absolute wrong skill to be right. teaching. So now we're right. now we're involved in working on things like conflict resolution. It's why like the folks at Vital Smarts have such a dynamic business, because mm-hmm. they teach crucial conversations. How do we engage with people? Again, it goes back to how do we understand what it means to be a human being at work today? So I think you've got those pieces. But the other thing that happens, especially in colleges, is that we expect kids to spend the first 2 years of college taking their sort of general education requirements so they can identify their major.
Right.
The challenge, though, is that, and this was a big frustration of mine when I worked at the universities, was that as the world is changing as fast as it is, and they're saying, well, the jobs that we have today won't be around in 5 years or
right,
10 years.
Right.
The colleges, you know, taking a business degree requires, I believe, and I don't have a business degree, but almost requires less full-time professors and more apprenticeships and people that are in there talking about, here's my problem, here's my challenge. It's why
right.
it's why people are listening to podcasts like this, because to go back to the answer of do we learn, we're craving learning all the time. And the thing is that just the concept of learning has changed so dramatically in the last 20 years that I don't think most people actually realize how much we're learning. And I believe it really started once we entered into this computer age.
Sure.
When all of a sudden we weren't doing book reports and citing one source. We were then, at least when I was teaching my sixth graders,
right.
What's the right source? Like, why are you using that source? Why are you using this source? And mm-hmm. so this is what we need in the workforce now, are people that are malleable, are resilient. You hear these words a lot. Mm-hmm. And I do get concerned that the colleges may not be preparing people as well as they can. We're also starting to see some people, although Adam had a slide today that did sort of contradict that a little bit, And we are seeing that, or we're seeing a question around the value of college degrees now. Like is that required? Is it important for people to go $100,000 into debt or $250,000 into debt,
right,
or more? Is that critical? And what's our obligation as learning and development people to ensure that we're offering people enough tools that will meet their needs, because their needs are changing all the time?
Right. I think, you know, those are all interesting questions too, and I'm wrestling with them, and I think Karen is too. You know, we both have teenagers. I have twins that are 15, and so a boy and a girl, and they obviously learn very differently. They want to learn very differently. What I'm seeing from that age group, their friends, their people around them, is when they want to know something, they go online and find it. They find a credible source that's credible to them. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not that's a credible source, who knows, you know, in an official capacity, but it is to them, and they do learn from each other much more quickly and comfortably than probably I would have when I was in school, you know, 30 some odd years ago. I think you're right about conflict resolution. You know, my time in human resources, I spent all my time doing that. That's really why I got out of it, because I was good at it, but, you know, people would call me the Terminator because I could have those discussions, those really hard discussions, and then people would send me like a thank you note afterward because I did it with kindness and compassion and all those things. But it, you know, they would be like, well, how do you know how to do that? And I said, I don't know. I learned from my parents, like, how to have hard discussions. But I guess if you're not, maybe when you're young, getting that at home or being trained how to, you know, like if your sibling does something to you and you just slap them, right? Well, then problem solved. Well, then when you get into the workplace, you can't do that. So you bottle it up, or you don't want to work with them, or you leave, or you...
Yeah, slapping somebody at work, right? Is also referred to as a career-limiting move.
Exactly. So, but I mean, I think that's it's interesting, you know, even through high school now, you know, if they have a struggle in a work group, I was like smiling as you said that, because my daughter was working in a group with three other students, and, you know, two of them just weren't pulling their weight. Mm-hmm. The teacher did nothing about it. She didn't even want to get involved. And so it wound up the other two, my daughter and this other student, just did all the work. And I told her, you know, she was complaining to me. I said, unfortunately, you're going to have that same thing happen in the workplace. What you're doing is actually preparing you for work. It's sort of like, in my mind, how do you train students at that age to resolve those issues better so that when they do come into the workplace? I think right now it still falls to all of us in the workplace to have those trainings available, which is why we still do those around conflict resolution and so forth.
I agree with you, but I think the other thing to also look at it is that people look at it often from a training perspective, mm-hmm. when a lot of it is an ongoing discussion perspective as well.
Oh, sure.
And so I think that a lot of times we want to just go to a training, but we have to get comfortable with the fact that, you know, we coach people all the time about having tough conversations, and part of what we let them know is, look, you have to recognize that you're uncomfortable with this conversation and that it's a practice.
And that's okay too. I think sometimes my impression was when we would send, you know, employees at wherever I worked to training or to an instructor-led course or whatever it was at the time, they felt like they were coming out of there with some solution. Like, okay, I have this problem, I go to training, and now this is the solution or the approach I must use. No, it's just a potential solution, or maybe it's training you just to think more open-minded about solving a problem or approaching a work task or whatever. I mean, I do feel like that's something I feel is very different. So when I'm here, you know, going to these sessions, or yesterday when, you know, when we're hearing from Adam and your product management team on how you're designing your solutions to really fit in with this cultural approach to learning, it's really different, because I feel like that's what it's finally addressing. I don't know. Do you feel that way as you're, I mean, because you're embedded in this every day? Is that sort of, as you're working with both the Cornerstone team or any of your customers, are you feeling like there is that shift that they want to maybe not have a training to solve something specific necessarily? It's more to, I don't know, enhance how they approach work?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. It's like, I think of it like resource guides.
Okay.
You know, we have we like to call it a philosophy-based tool belt kind of approach to our leadership development. And I don't think that people are looking to go, I think some people might, but I don't think it's very effective to say, well, when A happens, do I do B? But rather, what I meant by discussion earlier is we need to create opportunities where people can openly share where they're struggling. Because you mentioned earlier, when people, whether they're kids or adults, come together mm-hmm. and have a conversation, that is called informal learning. Right. In fact, one of the earlier Russian psychologists, a guy by the name of Lev Vygotsky, talked about this thing called co-construction, where the best and deepest way that we can create meaning is by working and having a conversation with somebody else and co-constructing what that knowledge is to me. And I think that that's where I'm seeing work become really effective. So I mean, I love obviously I love what the company's doing,
right?
Because I'm staying at the company. But it really is trying to create opportunities in a safe environment for people to talk, for people to listen, to be able to record things, to build development plans, to talk about talent mobility and review. And, you know, we haven't started this campaign yet because I'm still sort of thinking about how we roll, but it's kind of like think of it as the Next Up campaign. You know, for example, the thing I look for when I hire people onto my team is for them to come in and say, when I ask them, what are your career goals? Mm-hmm. Which is always common in a new question. Mm-hmm. And I don't like to say there's a correct answer, but the correct answer that I'm looking for is like for that. Somebody to say, I want your job. I expect you to develop me so I can take your job. And the reason why I like that as the answer is because that intimates that my boss is grooming me for another job. And if we're continuing to move, mm-hmm. then you create again that career lattice. Mm-hmm. Now people are moving. And that's when the talent stuff becomes really interesting. So all the things we're doing, from the content play to moving to more of an experience platform, to really making learning with the AI, the big data, the prescriptive, predictive learning, kind of like the Netflix approach, is really trying to put as much as we can in other people's hands. Mm-hmm. We also do something at Cornerstone that I brought to the company called Development Day. Mm. Where we do these days, they're now once a quarter in a full-blown way.
Oh, wow.
Where employees teach each other about just about anything they want.
We have
sessions from Python programming to, we've had whiskey tasting, to managing remote employees, to setting up a remote office, to, I mean, we've had over 700 people teach these courses.
That's
which
great.
I'm trying, the reason why I'm using that as an example is because it ties together one of the questions I think you were getting at earlier about investment and cost of training, and there's a reduction in training cost. Mm-hmm. And when you apply for training awards, one of the questions they always ask you is, how much money do you spend per employee? I don't like that mm-hmm. question. And the reason why is, take Development Day, where, mm-hmm. again, we've done this now for 6 years. Mm-hmm. We've had over 700 different teachers mm-hmm. that are employees. We've gathered, I think it's around 45,000 hours in our system. We've captured 45,000 hours of employee training at zero cost.
Right.
So if I'm going to apply, for example, for a training award, and they say, how much do you spend on employee training per employee per training hour, my score is going to go tremendously down. Mm-hmm. However, the cultural impact, the employee engagement impact, because that's the thing. That's what people say about work now, is what's the culture?
Mm-hmm.
And culture is defined by experience, and it's defined by language. Do we know what we're talking about? Do we say the same things? Do we know how we're expected to work here? And so the world of work in the HR space right now is, I never in my wildest dreams, thought I was ever going to be a teacher.
Right.
In fact, when I went back to my 10-year reunion a number of years ago, and I met one of the teachers, and they said, what are you doing? And I said, I was a teacher, and they about turned to ashes. And I never thought I'd go into the HR side of the world.
Right.
And yet what I find is that people that are in HR now, and my daughter, funny enough, so I have a daughter who is 23, and my other daughter who's 21. One's going into her senior year of college, the other one's in the world of work.
Okay.
You know, she talked to me a couple weeks ago, and she said, you know, somebody came and spoke to us, and I'm thinking about doing a master's degree in human resource management.
Good for her.
Now, she doesn't really know a lot about what I do, which is the coolest part of the conversation. And as I started to probe a little bit, because 23-year-olds don't want to talk to you too much.
Sure.
What she shared with me was, she said, you seem to be always busy involved in like business decisions. Mm-hmm. Like, I always thought human resources, based on what people told me, was where people go when they get in trouble, but you don't get people in trouble. And I said,
No.
And so it's I think HR, it's why we don't have a lot of HR functions anymore. They are called people or talent or
exactly.
this, because we're trying to, it's always this evolution. I think that's why it's so exciting to be in this field right now.
I love
that. You're investing in people.
Absolutely.
Every day. And every day. But more than that is we're trying to get them, whether it's through development day or through the micro learning stuff they can take on the system. You know, it's, again, to go back to the teaching days that we had, I used to tell my students very simply, my job is not to teach you. Mm-hmm. My job is to provide you an opportunity to learn.
Absolutely.
Now, the fact of the matter is when you look at learning, if we pull the filter back a little bit, you have controlled learning and you have uncontrolled learning. Sure. We're always learning.
Right.
The key that we need to be thinking of is, are we putting people in an environment where they're learning the right behaviors to execute the right tasks?
Guided learning.
Well, and I think too that when to build upon what you said about, you know, kind of putting them into that opportunity to learn, it's about giving them moments with people so that there's an impact. And so maybe the measures aren't correct, right? If we're just looking at some of the old measurements for learning success, which is, you know, how many students went through a course. Well, that doesn't imply there's any success coming out of that, right? Other than they just did it or you spent X amount of dollars. But that's, at the time, that was what we thought was important to measure. Whereas I feel like the measurement is now sort of evolving in a good way, because you might even say, like, whether it's someone listening in on this episode or whether it's Karen and I learning from you, there are things that you've said today that will stick with me 10 years from now, and I can look back and think like, well, okay, I learned that from him. And maybe I don't have the situation to use that knowledge that you've given us today, but in 5 years, 10, who knows, right? Where that moment of learning is going to come back to me. And to me, that's why things like podcasting or, you know, what Cornerstone is doing with sort of being able to record your own learning. And I know we're kind of like running out of time, but one thing I do want to mention that was you touched on it is whether it's talking about your own development days or learning that your customers are doing kind of on their own. One of the things I saw that was very interesting is being able to track that, whether it's in Slack or whatever, you know, Outlook or wherever they are, and record that informal learning happened. I feel like that to me is what actually drives engagement for employees, because it's a relationship. And I think years ago it was, again, what can we push upon an employee to make them engaged? Wrong approach, right? Now it's like, what opportunities can you offer up to hopefully have them feel that sense of belonging and camaraderie and community so that they then, the result, is an engaged person.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. In fact, I talk to people about our management leadership program all the time, and I say, look, none of our management or leadership programs are mandatory. Again, opportunity. Right. If you want it, take it. And people mm-hmm. say, how do you not mandate manager training?
No.
And my response is pretty simple. If it's good, they're going to tell 10 people you have to go take that
training.
You got
to take it, right?
And that puts the ownership on us. So I think right. that's, again, why that's it's exciting true. To be in this business.
It is. Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff, we could talk to you all day, and we may. We need to have you back on the show after we go through this. Thank you so much for taking your time. I know it's obviously a busy time at the event, but in closing, where can people connect with you? Where's the best way to find you? And if they want to know more or just learn more about Cornerstone, what's the best way for them to connect?
Well, if you want to learn more about Cornerstone, you can go to the website, okay. csod.com or cornerstoneondemand.com. If you want to, I try to do things on Twitter.
Okay.
I think it's...
Aspirational tweeting. I love it.
Yeah, I try. I think it's... I have to look it up. I think it's either J. Miller, PhD, or Dr. J. Miller.
Okay. We will look it up for you, and we'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, perfect. And I also have a regular article column that comes out now in Forbes.
Oh, good. Okay.
So we do a lot of writing and things like that. So if people just Google Jeff Miller Forbes, you'll get the Forbes Human Resources Council. There's a lot of articles
good.
In there.
Oh, we'll put the link in the show as well. And are you on LinkedIn as well, if people want to connect there? Okay.
Yeah. And I'll also be at HR Tech.
Even better. Okay, so everyone, now you know, you have to use your Steve300 code to come to Human Resources Conference, Tech Conference, and then you can meet Jeff in person, potentially. So this is good. Well, thank you. And Karen, thank you for coming on the show. And,
thank you for having me. It was wonderful to be here.
For the conversation. Thank you to all of our listeners. Please feel free to listen to our show archives. We've had a lot of shows lately, both from Steve and I together, and from Ben Eubanks, and also from George Larocque. So Thank you so much for listening, and find the HR Happy Hour wherever you listen to your podcasts. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.